Blog Talk Radio.
Chaos flight controllers, gonna go for landing. Retro,
go.
Rhino,
go.
Guidance,
go.
Control,
go.
Telcom,
go.
GNC,
go.
Econ,
go.
Surgeon,
go.
Capcom, we're go for landing.
You are tuning in to an episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Maria Wilson-Duff. Join us as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, demons, and so much more. Everyone, and thank you as always for tuning in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, joined once again with the beautiful and talented Maria Wilson-Duff. Maria, what's up?
Hello, hello, hello. Have you missed me? It's been like a month since I've been on.
It's been a little while. We have missed you. You know, we've been playing some old episodes, kind of taking some time off. You know, life always gets in the way. There's always so much going on, but we are back live for our usual weekly live shenanigans. So what have you been up to?
Moving into a new house, trying to empty out my old one. I'm trying to get my cattle farm situated to where I can get my cattle sold. Kind of got a new position at work, and you know, let's just pile all the stress on at one time and see if I can handle it.
That does sound like a lot of work. Are those you selling those cows for like beef? Because I like burgers.
Oh yeah, they're beef cattle.
Oh yeah, slice me off a piece of steak, please.
They're all Black Angus. I've got a Charlay or two stuck in there. Sometimes that happens, but the majority of them are Black Angus, and I do the. I'm a very small time cattle farmer, so my cattle are more of a very calm herd. They're not like what they call a turnaround cattle, where they buy them for a while and then they sell them off. So mine are pretty calm, and I'm kind of blessed with that, and they know who feeds them, and so it's not too dangerous, but I'm getting to the age where going out in the wintertime to go put hay out and by myself and stuff like that, probably not exactly safe. So it's kind of time for me to get out of it.
So the burning question on my mind is, have they been abducted by space goblins, and or has Chewbacca attacked one of your cows?
Well, kind of a... I love that sound effect.
Looking for an excuse to hit that button.
I have had an interesting situation to come up where I went to go feed one morning, and I have an extra cow in my field. So I'm kind of thinking that maybe the aliens tried to abduct this one, and it jumped ship and landed in my field.
An extra cow, like out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere.
Is it tagged?
Out of nowhere. Sure is. If I had cattle close to me, I could understand, you know, maybe it came out of one fence into another and the owners would come looking for it. But on three sides of me are soybean and cornfields. So it's not like it just had an easy skip, jump, and hop to end up in my field. So, and I've let people know that I have an extra cow. So if they have, they're missing one, I've got it.
That is really weird, actually. Are you sure you just didn't get confused? Like, it's got, like, one of them ear tags that totally goes to somebody else and everything.
Oh, it's got a totally... I don't have any white-faced cows. and this one is black with a white face. All of mine are either solid black, or like I said, I've got a Charlotte or two in there. And so, I mean, it's not easily mistaken. And it's just, it's here. So it's been here for about a month. Well, it's that the show that I was supposed to, that I missed with you and Sherry when she was a guest that night.
Uh-huh.
And I said my cow had gotten out. Well, I had some calves to get out, but this cow was already here. So I don't know if it found that hole in the fence and come in or what, but they're just, it's just all so stressful. Fences and making sure that the calves are healthy, and you know, wintertime comes and you've got to make sure you have enough hay, and got to, whether it's raining, snowing, 20 below, it doesn't matter. You have to be out there in the middle with them. And you know, it would be different if I had farmhand or something like that, but it's just me, and it's getting a little dangerous. After last winter, it's time to get rid of them. So.
I couldn't do that sort of thing because I'm pretty much allergic to physical labor, but I commend you for your efforts on raising your cattle.
Well, thank you, dear, because if you'd have been around here, you would have already been dead. I'd have killed you. With everything that's had to be done, because I've kind of been moving everything by myself, too. My neighbor, he's helped me a couple of days with some of the big items, but everything else, plates, dishes, all of that stuff, I've moved on my own. So it's taken me forever. But when I called a moving company to ask them to do all this for me, and they told me how much they were going to charge me for 2.5 hours of work, and I was like, no, thank you. I'll just take my time and do it on my own.
Well, yeah, as we all know, moving isn't fun. It's a nightmare.
It is. It is. But it's a much better place. It's just pretty secluded, and it's pretty awesome, and I'm still able to see the stars, and the moon is peeking out at me right now through the trees, so it's good and quiet.
Very cool. Well, nothing much going on this end. I've had an interesting couple of weeks. Most notably, I kind of had a traumatic to me experience, because I went to the ER the other day. You want to hear about that? That was kind of entertaining.
Yes, because I want to see how much of this is you being a hypochondriac.
Okay, well, let me give you a little bit of backstory. Let's go back. Let me take you back 15 years. So back in the day, I was a drinker, and I was the type of drinker. I was like OCD with my alcohol, and I do apologize for this not being paranormal in the least, but to me, it's entertaining to talk about. So I would go home, and I would just slam a six-pack of light beer on an empty stomach. I always had to have an empty stomach. And then I would gorge myself. Well, as the years passed, I started to realize that I was getting fat. And so I thought a brilliant idea would be, let's cut down on the calories. So I went to the liquor store, knowing nothing about liquor, because I was always a light beer drinker. And I looked and I was like, ooh, tequila. So let me get the cheapest bottle of tequila I can find. So that's what I did. I don't remember what the name of it was. So I'm like, okay, well, tequila, let me just, you know, instead of having six beers, I'll just do six shots of tequila.
Oh,
so I did that for, I don't know, a couple of weeks. And I remember this very specifically, which is odd because my brain has been so abused by alcohol, I can't even remember what I ate for breakfast. But I do remember this. I remember sitting at my computer, and I felt a little blip in my chest, you know, a little palpitation. And I thought, oh, that was weird. I'd felt them very rarely previously. And then it just wouldn't stop. It was like every other beat or every few beats. And I was like, oh, shit, something's not right. What has this tequila done to me? My heart was fine before the tequila. And this, at these episodes can go for weeks, months, and then just disappear for months or disappear for a day and come back. And it's like every other beat, and I feel it. So then I'm, you know, if I wasn't already predisposed, oh, I think I'm having a mini stroke. Hold on, I'm having a TIA right now. If I wasn't predisposed to be a little bit on the hypochondriac side, it probably wouldn't have thought much about it and gone seen and get been tested and everything. But I started to, like, fixate on it. So for years and years and years, I'd, like, count my pulse. Okay, how many times is it doing a minute? And I also went in and took a stress test and an echo. And, you know, they're just like, you know, you're just having technically, they're premature ventricle and premature atrial contractions. Sometimes, like I said, every other beat, not medically significant, but just stinking annoying. And so this has been going on for years and years, and I was in and out of the ER because it was driving me crazy. I wore a couple of Holter monitors that said I had supraventricular tachycardia. I would have chest pain all the time. And so I just became what I think there's a word like cardiophobic over my heart. It's just paranoid over my heart because of this.
Oh, my bad.
So relentless and nonstop for the most part. I should also add the last few months have been great. I don't know why it stopped. But anyhow, so fast forward, I was having weird chest pain, like on the left side. It felt like my hand was going numb, you know. I'm like, oh, God, this is it.
Oh, my gosh.
This is what I've been worrying about all these years. I'm finally having my heart attack. Sweet. So I go into work. And I'm like, hey, I'm having chest pain. And my boss's boss is there. And I'm trying to decide whether or not I should just go to the ER or I'll just run some, you know, labs on myself, you know, see if my heart's damaged. And I'm like, oh, I better go to the ER. So I get walked up to the registration with my boss's boss. Talk about embarrassing. And they wheel me in. And it was like, I've been to the ER several times for heart-related things, rhythms or chest pain, and I'm laying there, and I'm just, it seemed so lax, like nobody was concerned. I thought, hey, I'm an employee here, you know, I'll get the special treatment kind of thing. And it was pretty much almost like they psychically knew I wasn't having a heart attack. It was the weirdest thing. Anytime I've ever gone to the ER, you know, they're always like super attentive and stuff like that. So I'm chilling back there, and they come and hook up their 12-lead EKG. And the nurse grabs the piece of paper, you know, that prints, and she's just walking out. And she looks at it. I see her glance. I'm watching her. She glances down at it, and she goes, interesting. And then I'm like, what? What? You can't say something like that to someone like me. And she's like, oh, it doesn't say anything like you're having a STEMI or anything. And I'm like, oh, this is weird. So I'm sitting there. For about an hour, you know, they're running some blood, do a chest x-ray kind of thing. And I'm, you know, I will get recognized in there. And you know, the dude that did my EKG, I know, you know, in passing kind of deal. And I see somebody on the other side of the ER. He's just gives me this long stare, somebody else that knows me there. And I'm like, oh my God, this is just, not only am I nervous for being in the ER, it's like double nervous because I work there. And so I'm laying in bed, and I'm just like, oh, my God, I got to take a raging piss, right? But I don't want to get up, you know. And it's like the bathroom's at the other end of the ER. I'd be out there with a nightgown. Everyone's going to, you know, everyone's going to recognize me. So I press the button on the thing. I'm like, hey, I got to take a leak. And so they unplug me, whatever, and I'm like, oh, my God. So I'm wearing the nightgown thing, and I'm just walking down, and I'm just, like, focused forward, like, okay, you know, people are going to see me, whatever. So I do that.
You don't look at them,
back.
They won't look at you.
Yeah, kind of thing. I just, don't ever go. If you work in a hospital, don't go to the ER. People will recognize you. So anyways, I get back in the room a while later. The doc comes in, and he's like, well, your EKG looks similar to the last one. You know, there's no damage to your heart according to the labs, you know, and this and that. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I was still kind of wondering what the nurse was talking about when she read the readout on it. So I go, I look at my chart later that day, and there's all my tests. I read the chest x-ray, and I read the labs, and I'm like, oh, you know, my labs are good. And I'm like, where's the EKG? Like, they posted everything but the EKG. And I knew that was going to be weird because normally they would just get released. You know, a doctor looks at it, and then they release it into my chart. And I thought it was weird that that didn't, like, release. So I knew something was whack on that because I hadn't received it. So I sent an email to the doctor's office, like, the next day. I'm like, hey, can you release the EKG so I can take a look at it? I don't know how to read those things very well. I know some, but... So they were like, yeah, come in, see the doctor. You can talk your EKG. And, you know, they want to evaluate me for future cardiac risk and all that. And... after a little while later, they released the EKG. So I pull it up and I'm like, what? And so it says possible atrial enlargement, which I'm not worried about because that always comes up on my EKG, no big deal. But the next thing I didn't even know was a thing. It said ST abnormality, possible digitalis effect. So basically the ECG is interpreting my heart rhythm and all the stuff associated with that, with me being a patient on digoxin, which is a heart medication. Because digoxin does something very specific to the ST segment, which there's no point for me in trying to explain that, but it messes up the thing, the EKG, right, in a very specific way, which is weird. So, of course, I'm Mr. Google, and I'm getting on there like, digitalis, what does digitalis do to your heart rhythm? And I'm looking at it, and one of the things it does a very specific thing to part of your rhythm. And I'm looking at my strip, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's that, you know. And so I was like, oh, my God, this is just stupid. Has somebody been surreptitiously giving me digoxin, trying to kill me? Or is my heart just that whacked up? Or is the machine whacked up and the leads were placed incorrectly? Or is it because I'm fat or this and that and the other thing? Because you can't really rely on those auto readouts. It's really how the doctor interprets it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of things that can affect that, like your electrolytes and this and that. But it was still making me crazy nervous because it was so weird. And... So I'm like trying to figure out what this all means. I need somebody that actually knows how to read those better than I do. And anyway, so that was just fun. So I went to the doctor like a few days later and had him look at it. And I could tell just he had no idea what he was looking at, which kind of made me more nervous. And I was pointing out some things to him, and he's like, oh, okay, I see what you're talking about, and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, oh, my God, this is like, it's a new doctor. He's been a doctor for a few years, and he has no idea. But he said, oh, I don't think I'm not really seeing anything that's making me concerned. If I was concerned, I would have just sent you straight to a cardiologist for catheterization. So, I mean, that was a little comforting. So now I've got to go do a stress test and an echo. The echo I'm not worried about. That's easy. They just, you know, put a transducer on you and see what your heart's doing. But I hate stress tests. I've had three previous stress tests. I get so nervous that just getting off the bed to get on the treadmill, my heart's going 130, and then they're looking at me like I'm going to stroke out. So,
glad you're able to do the physical one and it's not the medically induced one.
Yeah, my mom's had to do that. That's even super more unpleasant. But anyway, yeah, this is what happens when you're middle-aged and you're fat. Now, I don't want to give the wrong impression out there. I'm not morbidly obese. I'm not like somebody that can't get off the couch, and I don't weigh 500 pounds. But I'm pretty tall, and I'm pretty heavy.
And you do no physical activity whatsoever.
Unless you consider my work physical activity.
No. Sorry.
And then the other thing
about exercise.
My legs have been swelling for like a year, and like I'm just like, oh, I know what's going to happen. They're going to say I'm in heart failure. I got a clogged artery. I'm going to need bypass. but maybe that's just all in my mind. And then I'll be a ghost, and then I can watch you all.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to learn about how to do that.
Yeah. So that's my little story. Totally unparanormal, but hopefully entertaining nonetheless. I did want to mention one thing slightly paranormal. Is I don't know if anybody looked at the Facebook page, but I did a live stream of a virtual reality game called Phasmophobia. And it's you play with three other players, and you do ghost investigations with all the equipment, K2 meters, motion sensors, all that, on these really haunted houses, and they can be possessed by demons or ghosts, spirits, djinn, oni, banshees, wraiths, just everything. And so the objective of it is to get the various different things of evidence. And once you get whatever evidence you get, you figure out what type of ghost it is, and you win if you don't die, because these ghosts eventually hunt you, and they lock you in the house.
Wow.
They lock you in the house so you can't get out, so you try and like hide in a closet or whatever, and you're trying to get pictures of the ghosts and all this electronic evidence. It's kind of intense. It's not the scariest virtual reality game I have, but it's fun. I've been playing it a lot, and I would highly recommend, if anybody wants to have a really nasty paranormal investigation and has the ability to do VR, already has VR, check out Phasmophobia. It is completely entertaining and fun, and I plan on streaming some more of those. The one I streamed wasn't terribly interesting. I didn't end up dying on it, but it's really fun. They've got various houses and like cabins and a derelict high school and asylum. And there's nothing like being in the basement of the asylum, and it's so huge you get lost. And if you know anything about virtual reality, it's like being there. It's pretty intense.
I've tried one of those games once, and it was a Star Wars something or other, and it was pretty wild. And I didn't understand how to play the game, so it probably would have been more fun had I understood what it was I was supposed to do. But yeah, I don't. Ghosts are creepy enough. I don't need to see them up close.
Well, these are evil ghosts. You take a book in, and they will write demonic stuff in it, or get out, or we're going to kill you. And the neat thing about this game, it's not just for VR. It's cross-platform, so you could do it VR just on your PC. But it's also very voice-activated. So if you're trying to communicate with the ghost and it responds to your voice in answering your questions over the spirit box, but every once in a while when you're searching through these houses, you find a Ouija board. And so you can actually use the Ouija board and ask it a question. I did it for the first time today. I put the Ouija board on the counter in the kitchen, and I'm like, where are you at? And then the planchette moves by itself and spelled out kitchen. I mean, it's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, thankfully, you don't think that'll open up a portal for you somewhere down the line, do you?
I really wish you hadn't said that, because... I did think about that. I thought about, you know, dealing with all these virtual evil spirits, and it's funny because I have a nightstand next to the bed, and I reached in it and I opened it up, and sitting right there was a K2 meter. So I was like, oh, I'm good.
Oh, nice.
Something happens, I can detect it. You know, I'll just watch TV with the K2 meter going, and I'll be good. If it starts flashing, then go grab a crucifix or something.
Yeah, well, you can conjure up your own stuff now. It's like all those horror movies and Poltergeist and The Exorcist and The Omen and things like that. You know, you're trying to get that evil, creepy vibe in there, and all that energy kind of like draws it in. So, you know, this may be the reason why your basement was haunted when you were living there. Now you've moved into this new house, and, you know, it might come after you.
I have not seen anything paranormal here, thank God. But maybe it's just brewing and it's going to really kick up. Who knows? But I don't think so. I don't get that vibe. You know, when I got this place, I was, like, seriously turning on my hoodoo, my psychic powers, and I was like, yeah, I do not detect anything spiritual in this house. It's just spiritually dead, and I'm totally cool with that because Lord knows I don't need that shit in my life.
And that's so funny because that's something that you used to do amongst all the other million jobs that you did at the same time. But anyway,
it is true. That's why I have the equipment. You know, I tell you what, the phasmophobia is a lot more intense than going to somebody's house who claims it's haunted.
Oh, definitely. But see, and if you ever got back into investigating after you've been doing that, you'd be bored because it wouldn't be as exciting, wouldn't be as much stuff going on.
That's true. I have to say, one of the best investments I ever made was selling my Harley Davidson and buying the stuff for virtual reality. It is incredible. Not just scary games. You just have to experience it to understand how cool it is. And it doesn't have to be violent games. I mean, there are experiences that you can download that you just blow your mind.
Nah.
Yes.
I'll stick with the real deal. I don't need anything special added in.
You have to be careful, though, because you can fall if you're not paying attention to where your body's positioned. And you can also destroy things around you, like I destroyed a 55-inch television. So you have to, you got to be careful.
Oh. Ooh, that was expensive.
Yeah, I was swinging my arms, playing a music game, you know, called Saber Beat, and my hand extended a little too far backward, and then, nope, I just destroyed a 2-year-old Samsung smart TV. Oh, well.
Oh, no. Well, that's okay. You know, it just kind of happens. We live and we learn.
Live and learn. Life lessons. So I also wanted to talk about, you know, I'm really big on the UFO subject and abduction. And I ran across a couple abduction cases that I was not aware of. I mean, you have the big ones. You have Travis Walton. You have Betty and Barney Hill abduction. There's a couple that I'm pretty sure, well, maybe you've heard of, but I wanted to mention. So tell me if you've heard of this abduction before. It was in 1994 in Meng Zhaogu. I don't know Chinese, so Meng something, Zhaogu. It was in the Red Flag Forest, and he said he was traveling with a relative, and they were following a strange object in the sky in the forest, and he claimed that he had seen the object descend in the forest. He then claimed that he was harassed by entities aboard a craft. He said that he'd be taken from his home and forced to copulate with aliens, so he would see these UFOs in the forest. They would come abducted from his home. He claims that they showed him Mars, and they also claimed it was their home world. And so his story has kind of been circulated a lot in China, a little bit in the States, and a lot of people are divided on the validity of his stories. Some people say that they believe the initial account where he saw the UFO in the forest was real, but then he just started creating false encounters. He drew a grid diagram of this alien, which to me looks like a tall pickle with arms. So
no,
when he said he was forced to copulate with him, I was like, yeah, that's not cool. So have you ever heard of that one from China in 1994?
Yeah, I think I've avoided that one. You know, it's like you get people that turn in reports and stuff, and then, like you said, they start adding to it. So you don't know if they're actually remembering something that happened, or, and they have to add to the story, or if they're just making it up. That's the worst.
Yeah, I think nowadays a lot of people are just making up stuff. I've come to learn that people want attention, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me if people like to fabricate stories just to get attention. But it's hard to weed those out from the people that really do have experiences, because I'm sure people do.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And it also makes you wonder how, what makes that story so big? Because there are so many people with personal experiences of abduction and things like that. So what makes one story so much bigger and more important than others? Is it because it happened so many years ago, you know, like Travis Walton and Betty and Barney Hill and things like that? And it's like now it seems more and more these stories are coming out, but they're not made into a big deal. You know, everybody's just kind of going like, oh, yeah, okay. And then they move on.
I think people see movies being made. You know, people want to get on TV and do all that. And I think that's a big lure for people to fabricate or outright lie about their experiences. But, yeah, it's unfortunate the world we live in. Have you ever heard of the Pascagoula, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Hooked on Phonics abduction? This one's gotten more press. I've heard of this one before. It was
involved with that?
It was 1973, co-workers Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker claimed they were abducted by aliens while fishing. That one recently has received more press because I do remember hearing more about it recently. They said they were fishing.
Yes, I spoke with Calvin a couple of times.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, then you are the one to talk about this.
He, his other partner, Calvin, decided not to speak so much about it because he was watching what was going on with the other gentleman, and the other one just, he wouldn't quit talking about it, and he's obsessed with it, and he was watching the way that people were treating him, and so Calvin just decided that, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and live my life and raise my kids, you know, when he got married and things like that, and then he decided to come out and talk about it afterwards, which really amazed me that it caught so much attention. But Calvin he's just as Southern as he can be, and he's just a really good guy. And it just didn't seem, I mean, it was, his story was absolutely horrific. The pain and everything that they went through, the things that they saw and felt was just horrible. And how he was able to bury it and just live his life and then come out to talk about it later on just amazes me.
How, God, we ought to get him on this podcast. That would be awesome. I'd love to hear the story. I just have the little nuggets of information, how they said they heard a strange noise and saw blue flashing lights and a large object hovering above them, and they said that they were conscious for the abduction. What I find most interesting is a pair described three creatures with robotic slick mouths and crab-like pincers. I haven't heard of that one. Haven't heard of crab people.
Yeah, and he said also they seemed like they floated when they were coming near them. They, not like they were walking or anything like that. They were like floating. So that was something different that I have not heard with other abductions. You never really hear about that. You just tend to hear that they were abducted. You don't ever hear anybody talk about being able to watch one walk up to you or how they got to you. They're there. You know, you turn around and they're just right there in your face. So I thought that was really interesting.
I couldn't imagine what would be going through my head if I experienced something like that. One thing I wonder about is, you know how much shady stuff our government does, right? I almost wonder if some of these experiences are actually not aliens, but they're designed to make the participant believe they're aliens. You know, maybe with some sort of drug or costume, and there's some nefarious government plot, and and I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much into it, but, you know, I'm kind of a conspiracy nut, so.
Well, no, I've heard that theory before. You know, it makes you wonder how much of what's happening to people is done by our government, just basically as an experiment to see how you're going to handle, how people will handle this type of thing. Where they do have to drug you, where the true alien abductions, there's no drugs involved. I mean, they're just, it's all mind control or whatever it is that they're doing to you. I can't even begin to pretend to understand how you are being made completely motionless and everything else if drugs are not involved.
Well, if you ask people at Psychology Today, they'll say that alien abduction isn't real and that it's all sleep paralysis. What do you think about that? I think in some cases it probably is.
Well, you know, sleep paralysis has been tied in with demons and stuff like that as well. But, you know, then the science come along and say, oh, no, that's not possible. That's just, you're dreaming and you're just, that's what's happened to you.
I remember having, I know your mind can do some really crazy stuff when you get caught in between waking and sleeping, you know, with hallucinations, hypnagogic hallucinations. And I would be willing to bet that, you know, me being kind of Captain Skeptical, despite having my own experiences, I would imagine a lot of that is stuff, the majority of that is stuff like that. I kind of have a hard time believing that millions of people are being abducted by aliens. But if they are, I also understand why the government wouldn't want us to know, because that would probably induce some pretty intense panic.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, now they've gone from it just being UFO sightings and UFO encounters to now it's a threat. You know, now they're looking at them as a threat. Especially whenever they're coming into contact with our military and things like that. So, you know, and they follow them. And I mean, you got the case Mantell. I mean, he was the first person that was ever categorized as being killed doing a UFO chase. But they think they've tried to say a lot of that was because the airplane that he was in at the time could not handle the height in which that he was flying. Of course, you know, your oxygen level and things like that. So they're thinking that he got up way too high in the trying to chase this UFO, and then he just lost consciousness and then just plummeted to Earth.
Well, why didn't the alien crab people save him? Couldn't they just, like, use a tractor beam on his plane?
Yeah, apparently not. Apparently they didn't want him. So they just let him chase him.
Well, if people are listening or people out there thinking, aliens don't exist, come on, it's in everybody's imagination. You know, back in the, 60s or 50s, there are a lot of well-documented cases of UFOs hovering over our ballistic missile sites and shutting them down. Not just one time, but a lot of times during, I think it was during the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Lots of witnesses, technical data, and stuff like that are out there. So I believe they're out there.
Oh, yeah, they are. And I know a gentleman that was involved with something like that. And it was, you know, he said it was the craziest thing you've ever seen in your life. And he's like, all of these lights come on. You can't turn them off because, number one, you don't really, you have to have two people that have codes for this stuff. And the other one's not there. And everything comes on, and you can't get it turned off, and then all of a sudden it shuts itself off. So, and it to me, that is pretty creepy. You know, that's
especially,
like having all of your TVs come on and you can't do anything about it.
I've had that happen in the middle of the night. That's scary. Not where I live here. But all those missile systems, they're not constructed willy-nilly. They're built with redundancies. They're designed for people on the outside not to be able to manipulate the system specifically. So when that happens,
right.
That makes it's not like they're just plugging into a wire on the outside or beaming a signal or something. There's some sort of technology that allows them to control these redundant systems, backup systems. Everything's got backups and backups and backups for every possible scenario, including your planes that you fly up. If your hydraulics go out or the fly-by-wire system, there's always a backup of a backup of a backup so that the planes don't crash. That's why air travel is so safe.
Well, and then isn't there, what was the deal with the in Hawaii when the warnings went out on all of everybody's telephones talking about that there was a missile coming in, and then they just blamed it on this guy because he hit the wrong button?
I would be surprised if it worked like that, where there's literally like an unshielded button that you could press to freak everybody out. I would assume, logically, unless Hawaii is living back in the 30s, that there's a system so that does not happen. Just like, you know, I'm sure the president's black suitcase that has the launch codes or whatever else it has, it's not a matter of just pressing a button. It, you know, the key access codes, this and that. And I do remember that story. And, I just leaned on the button. Give me a break.
Yeah, like, oops.
Well, sorry.
But,
I hit the panic button.
Yeah.
I hit the nuclear war button. Sorry, warning button.
Yeah, oopsie. But yeah, I don't know. I just think that's really crazy because that story kind of changed a couple of times. But the whole gist of it was he just kind of hit the wrong button, and I'm just. And they really think people believed that story. Of course, I'm sure there's people that did, but I'm just like. If our whole military system is on the oops of I hit the wrong button, we're screwed. We are totally screwed.
Well, you know, nuclear war happened almost several times. It was like right on the verge from stuff that happened back in the Cuban Missile Crisis. We came close, and nobody talks about those stories where it almost came to be because of, you know, weird things that happened. I'm not talking about UFOs or paranormal. I'm just talking about, you know, people that are panicking and weird circumstances that got people to almost launch missiles. And
you can
just Google it, see how close we got to mutually assured destruction, because we got close a few times.
And they still keep that pretty well closely guarded. I don't think a whole lot of documents have been declassified.
Yeah, there are all sorts of crazy things happened back then. So back the Strategic Bombing Command, back at the height with the Soviet Union and Cuba, they had these bombers flying 24/7 on routes, you know, Alaska and all that. So there were always nukes in the sky for years. These planes would stay up for ages being refueled with nukes. There were even instances where planes crashed that had nukes. And not all the nukes were recovered. I know one, I don't believe, was ever recovered somewhere. It's either in the south or in the east coast. It went down in the water, and they never found it. So there's a nuke somewhere off the coast of wherever. It was a coast, or I think it was like a marshland or something, but they never found it. And it's a scary world we live in.
Well, thankfully, they just don't blow up just willy-nilly. You got to add stuff to it to make it go. But
yeah.
You know, countries search for that stuff. When they know something's not been recovered, they'll try to go after it. So you got to keep your eye on them as well.
Yeah, it's a crazy world. I think a lot of people live in just like a fantasy land where they just sit around at home, work at their jobs, and watch reruns of Seinfeld and the Brady Bunch, and have no clue what's going on behind the scenes or what's been going on behind the scenes since the 50s or 60s. And it's just, history is interesting, the way we've evolved and everything. Of course, the alien technology, because
yes, definitely. They shared that information with us.
Yeah, at an alien summit below, some castle somewhere in Bavaria, I'm sure. The aliens went there, met with the politicians, and traded technology, and the government allowed the aliens to abduct people to harvest our organs and or whatever else, and that's how we got technology today. That's probably why we have Tesla. You know, we're able to have Teslas instead of Model Ps.
There you go. But, yeah, I mean, it does make you wonder. You hear some of the most outlandish stories ever. And, it's like you can't wrap your head around that stuff. And then somebody comes along and goes, man, somebody just made that up just to freak you out. There's absolutely no way that could have happened. Maybe it did. We don't trust our government.
That's the beauty of it. Post-World War II, I think the Nazis were really kind of the pioneers of, of policing government, psychological warfare, along with everything having to do technology with rockets and all that. And our government, I mean, there's people that think disinformation up, and so it's impossible to know the truth. And they know how to manipulate the masses, and even large firms and companies know how to do it. When you walk into a grocery store, the Cheetos aren't placed there just because they're like, hey, I think this is where we should put the Cheetos. They get psychologists to arrange grocery stores. It is a very scary world we live in. We are manipulated by the government. We're manipulated by corporations, drugs, everything. But we just don't know about it because we're all sheep. Because most people don't pay attention to it. They just want to go to work, collect their paycheck, and kiss their dog goodnight at night.
That's what we all want to do. We all think we're going to live our life and everything's going to be good. But like you said, it really drives me crazy that you go into the grocery store and they've changed things around and you get used to where everything is. And then 2 years later, they come back in and they jumble it all up again. So apparently they hired the wrong psychologist to do it the first time, and they've really screwed it up.
I don't know if they're psychologists, but I saw something on it one time. I mean, there's people that know how to get into the mind of the consumers so that they set the store up specifically, to how they want stuff to sell and what. A really obvious example, old school example. Last time when you went to a grocery store, did you have dull apples like they were off the tree, or were they covered in wax and shiny and attractive?
The first ones that I remember are the big red delicious apples that were bright and shiny.
Yeah, it's 'cause they don't grow off the tree like that. They're always trying to sell us stuff. Same thing with meat. You know why it's so red? Because they inject carbon monoxide in the package so that the meat stays red. Carbon monoxide, for God's sakes. So annoying. Just do a show on this.
It's so funny. Well, that's what gets me, is that you've got these people that want to minimize the amount of cattle that are in the U.S. or the world or whatever because they put off too much methane gas.
Don't get me started on that. It's so ridiculous.
Oh, I know it. It is so ridiculous. And I'm like, what they want to do is they want to make it to where that your food is not as available to you as you would like for it to be. That way there can be a shortage. That way they can drive up the prices, and it ain't the farmer that's going to be making the money off of it.
Yeah, that'll work out great.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord. Every time I talk about this stuff, it gets me all agitated, gets my blood pressure up, which probably isn't a good thing because my heart's all beating all weird. Yeah.
Well, I
told
you.
I kind of wish.
Now, see, if we'd have stopped at 30 minutes, then you wouldn't have been excited by now. I wouldn't have, like, gourded you into this.
I know. You know, I enjoy technology. I enjoy VR, computers, wireless, and stuff like that. But part of me just wish I could live in a simpler time, you know, living off the land and no government spying, and, you know, but...
Yeah, no, they were doing it back then, too.
I'm a 70s baby, so, you know, when I was a kid, home computers were super popular, and fortunately, I got addicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now you are the virtual reality game player that you are now because of it.
Oh, yeah. I've identified so many virtual ghosts that I'm, like, totally a ghost expert now that I could go out in real life and tell people that they have djinns in their closets and stuff because of my virtual ghost hunting experience. I'm a total pro. I know how to work all the equipment.
Yes, please do that.
Oh, everything is so ridiculous.
It really is. But, you know, that's the world we live in, and it just keeps getting crazier and crazier. And, you know, it's like we were talking about some of my friends we were talking about the other night. It's like every generation, it's like, well, the world's fixing to go to hell in a handbasket. No, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. It just keeps going faster and faster the older we get.
Absolutely. And, you know, I live in Portland, Oregon. You know, this place is still a crazy house. And they've been rioting for like 3 months straight or something ridiculous, just trashing the city. I don't understand.
They're letting them, and that's the thing. That's what I don't get. I don't understand why they are letting them do that.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've wondered that myself. I mean, if it was me, I respect free speech and all that, but at some point you have to say enough is enough. At this point, if I was in charge, I would be bringing in the National Guard and just arresting everyone because, you know, it's... If coronavirus hadn't... Coronavirus has hit all of us so hard. Restaurants, everything are closing down. People are losing their livelihood. And then on top of that, you have these rioters that are looting stores and making a difficult time even worse. Like, I don't understand how people are so terrible to people sometimes. It's like kicking somebody when they're down.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, there's one thing about protesting. There's another thing about destroying stuff. I mean, it's not the same thing. And they're trying to make it sound like the same thing, and it's not. If you're going to have a protest, have a protest, you know. But if you're going to start burning down the whole city and hurting people and attacking people that you don't even know and don't have anything to do with the situation, I mean, that's not protesting. That's just being evil.
Yeah, I mean, they're like trying to burn down the courthouse every night here. I watched a video, and I know we're all over the map on this show, but that's just the way it is. But I watched a video the other day, and there were, I don't know, 20, 30 people at an intersection, and they surrounded this cop car. You know, the cop's in the car. This lady jumps on the hood of the car and starts banging on it. And the cop just, floors it. And she goes flying off the car. And when people are, like, you know, trying to say cop abuse, this, that, and the other thing, I was like, oh, my God. You know what? If you're stupid enough to do that to a cop to damage his vehicle and get on top of it, and then you get hurt, it ain't the cop's fault. You have to look from the perspective of the cop. He's surrounded by 30 people. He's outnumbered. What's he going to do, get out of the car and endanger himself? Now, make no mistake about it. I'm not a big fan of the cops. I've been abused by the cops. So... I'm not a huge fan, not a huge supporter, but I'm also a person of logic that sees things for what it is. And it's just that kind of stupid behavior that just kills me.
Oh, yeah. And they're showing it live on TV as often as they can. And, you know, and it's like, why? And of course, the federal government can't step into a state to handle a situation until they're asked. And, you know, Portland's not going to ask for that specific help to get everything under control. Then it's not going to be too much longer until the people of Portland are going to, they're going to say, I've had enough. And then they're going to start fighting back. And then who's going to get in trouble? It's going to be the people that started fighting back. They'll be the ones that'll get into trouble.
Yep. And I hope this show is broadcast throughout the galaxy. And I would like to say, if there are any hostile alien, you know, civilizations out there, and you choose to attack the Earth, please start with Portland, Oregon, where I live. I'll take one. I'll take one for the team, because this city needs to be humbled.
Yeah, something needs to happen to it. That's for sure.
Now watch it happens, and I'll feel super guilty.
Yeah, you're right. It will.
Yeah,
now.
Man, I shouldn't have said that.
Then the police are going to come looking for you.
Yeah, and charge me with like 750,000 cases of homicide.
Yeah, inciting a riot.
Yeah, inciting an alien invasion. No, they'll probably make a law just for that, just to put me in prison for the rest of my life or execute me.
Probably.
What are those people that get busted for supporting material support to, like, alien civilizations? That's what I'll get charged with, and it'll be, like, a capital offense.
Yeah, there you go. Whatever they can come up with.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it looks like we're just about out of time. I'm thinking to eat a little healthy tonight, which I'm going to go do. I think I'm thinking tater tots covered in cheese. I'm probably going to die.
Oh,
Yeah, maybe have a mushroom on the side just to keep things a little natural.
Yeah, okay, you do that.
And with that, unless you have anything else, Maria, we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. Give us a like on Facebook and enjoy the stupid memes. Is it memes or memes? Because I don't want to sound like an idiot.
Memes.
Memes. Enjoy our humorous and tasteful memes. And if they offend you, then I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not. Then
yeah, no.
You're too sensitive.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope everybody has a safe and fantastic week. And don't riot. And don't press buttons that incite panic accidentally. And I think that's about it.
Yeah, that's enough for tonight.
Yeah, I guess we'll call it. All right, hope everybody has a safe and fantastic week, and we'll see everybody next Sunday. Good night, everyone.
Good night.